ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम द श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 1 एंटाइटल्ड द हिस्ट्री ऑफ द लाइफ ऑफ अजामिल टेक्स्ट 33। कस्य वा कुत आयाता कस्मादस्य निषेधत किं देवा उपदेवाय यूयं किं सिद्धसत्तमाः। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Dear sirs, whose servants are you? Where have you come from? And why are you forbidding us to touch the body of Ajamil? Are you demigods from the heavenly planets? Or are you sub-demigods? Or are you the best of devotees? Purport. The most significant word used in this verse is Siddha Sattamaha, which means the best of the perfect. In Bhagavad Gita 7.3, it is said, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye. Out of millions of persons, one may try to become siddha, perfect, or in other words, self-realized. A self-realized person knows that he is not the body, but a spiritual soul, Aham Brahmasmi. At the present moment, practically everyone is unaware of this fact. But one who understands this has attained perfection and is therefore called Siddha. When one understands that the soul is part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, and one thus engages in the devotional service of the Supreme Soul, one becomes Siddha Sattama. One is then eligible to live in the Vaikuntha planets or Krishna Loka. The word Siddha Sattama therefore refers to a liberated pure devotee. Since the Yamadutas are servants of Yamaraj, who is also one of the Siddha Sattamas, they knew that a Siddha Sattama is above the demigods and sub-demigods and indeed above all the living entities within this material world. The Yamadutas therefore inquired why the Vishnu Dutas were present where a sinful man was going to die. It should also be noted that Ajamil was not yet dead, for the Yamadutas were trying to snatch the soul from his heart. They could not take the soul, however, and therefore Ajamil was not yet dead. This will be revealed in later verses. Ajamil was simply in an unconscious state when the argument was in progress between Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas. The conclusion of the argument was to be a decision regarding who would claim the soul of Ajamil. This sixth canto, at its very outset, is very boldly declaring the exalted position of devotional service, especially over karma kand and jnana kand. Just like we had the Havala kand, the Harshad Mehta kand. So this karma kand and jnana kand is also kind of a scam to trap a conditioned living entity. Of course, eventually to come to devotional service. And over here, we can see how devotional service has been glorified in so many verses, giving the example of the pastime of Ajamil. Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu says, the six characteristics of devotional service out of which one is the devotional service is sudurlabha. It is very, very rare. So devotional service is sudurlabha, and therefore devotees are also sudurlabha. As herein, the Yamadutas, they are addressing the Vishnu Dutas as Siddha Sattama. That you are appearing to be the most perfect amongst all human beings. Siddha Sattama. And Prabhupada, he quotes that verse from the Bhagavad Gita in the purport. Manushyanam sahastreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye. How devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are so rare. Somebody who can understand Krishna tattvatah is so very rare to be found. In the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, when the Navayogendras are meeting with Maharaj Nimi, so Maharaj Nimi is also corroborating this particular fact, rarity of this human birth. And also he further speaks of the rarity of becoming a devotee within this human form of life. So Maharaj Nimi is saying, Durlabho manusho janmo dehinam kshana bhangura tatrapi durlabham manye vaikuntha priyadarshanam. Durlabho manusho janma. First of all, to get this human form of life is so durlab. Manusha janma is very, very durlab. In the Niti, there is one example given to establish this fact, how this human form of life is so very rare. The example given is of a Markat Mani. Markat means a monkey, and Mani is a jewel which sometimes is seen within the body of a monkey. But which kind of monkey? That kind of monkey who observes celibacy. Now, how rare it is to find a celibate monkey. Naishtika Markata. How difficult it is, because we have heard so many times what is the quality of a monkey. He has not just one but many paramours which he enjoys with. We also hear of the term Markata Vairagya. So it is said that when a monkey follows celibacy, then there is a mani which is found within him, which is called Markat Mani. Now, to find that money is very difficult. And imagine if somebody gets so many of those jewels, Markat Mani, that he makes a pot out of those Markat Manis. So how much rare is that? So similarly it is said that to get this human form of life is so rare as to get this Markat Mani. And if somebody has got so many monies that made a pot out of it, but is then using that pot to just clear some gutter water, it is so rare, but that Markat Mani pot is used just for some filthy purpose. So similarly, after having gotten this human form of life, when it is not properly used, then that is the condition of such a human being. And therefore Srila Prabhupada, one time in a morning walk in LA, He was speaking of this verse, Neha Bhikramanashosti Pratyavayo Na Vidyate Swalpam Apyasya Dharmasya Trayate Mahato Bhayat. Now, generally, we hear in Srila Prabhupada's books and also in our lectures that when we do not perfect this human form of life, then that Mahato Bhayat, which is mentioned, is that we may glide down into the animal species. The greatest fear is that, Prabhupada writes in the purport also of that verse. But on this particular morning walk, Srila Prabhupada, he made a very frightening revelation to all the devotees who were walking along with him. He said that when a human soul glides down into the animal kingdom, it's not that when it glides down into the animal kingdom, it will just become one type of each of those animals and then move on to the next higher species. When the human soul glides down into the animal kingdom, the animal body, then it has to become every type of every species first. And then it evolves to get another higher species. For example, if the soul has taken birth into, say, a dog species, then that soul has to undergo every type of dog, not just he becomes one type of dog and then moves on to the higher species. He has to become every type of dog. Alsatian, Doberman, you know, Pomeranian, Bulldog, every type of dog, and then we'll move on to the next higher species, and then become every type of that next higher species, and then move on to the next higher species. What to speak if the soul enters into a tree species? Just one body might take 5,000 years or 7,000 years if becomes a redwood trees, and that's just one type, and then the next one, the next one, the next one. So then, obviously, the question was asked, so when it becomes a human being, does it become all the 4 lakhs of the human species? Prabhupada said, no. Because for human beings, we have the karma. So according to the karma, the next human species will be given, or the next animal species will be given. So as we were discussing that yesterday, Mahato Bhayat, that when one performs slight devotional service, one can save oneself from Mahato Bhayat. Conversely, if one engages in slight materialistic activities, one can be put in Mahato Bhayat, in the greatest type of fearful situation. And therefore, Maharaj Nimi is saying in this verse, Durlabho Manusho Janma Dehinam Kshana Bhangura. First of all, to get this human body is so rare. Okay, we have all got this human birth, human form of life now, human body. But then it is said, Dehinam Kshana Bhangura. Within this human body, to live within this human body, it's for such a short period of time. Kshana Bhangura, this word is used. And Sridhar Swami comments that Kshana Bhangura can have two meanings. One is that it is dying at every moment, Kshana Bhangura. And another meaning that it can die at any moment. So if somebody might say that in my destiny I have 20 more years to live, still he is Kshana Bhangura, because the body is dying at every moment. And of course, we have heard so many times that the body can die also at any moment. We can die at any moment. And therefore, physically, our condition is very much uncertain, unstable. In fact, physically we are very much ill-equipped as against the animals. We can't swim like a fish, we can't run like so many other animals, we can't fly like the birds. In fact, there is this yoga teacher who comes and teaches us yoga. And if you see in yoga, most of these asanas, they are named after animals. Even in yoga, we have to imitate the animals. Bhujanga asana, Shwan asana, like a dog. Matsya asana, Kurma asana. So physically, whatever we have to do, we have to imitate the animals. On a physical level, we have to imitate the animals, even if it is yoga. So therefore, what is that which is that rare thing within us which is not available to the animals? And that is devotional service. And therefore, it is said that death in this material world is the most inevitable sound which everyone of us we have to hear one day. Satsvarup Maharaj, in one of his writings, he writes a poem in which he is saying, a grasshopper kills an insect. A lizard kills that grasshopper. A frog kills that lizard. Snake kills that frog. Eagle kills that snake. Human kills that eagle. Time kills them all. That is how time is so powerful. And slowly, what is happening is, in this human form of life, alongside, if we are not performing our devotional service, the body is drifting towards death. There is a story from the life of Lord Buddha. At one time, a lady who lost her son, she came to Lord Buddha and she was inquiring that, how did this happen? Can you do something about that? I've lost my son. So Lord Buddha told her that, I can solve your problem, but on one condition. You have to get me a handful of rice. And she said, that's all. That's very easy. Lord Buddha said that you have to go and beg for that rice. So she said, that's very easy. Anyone can give me a handful of rice. So she started to go and Buddha stopped her and said, another condition. You have to get that handful of rice from that house where no one has died. Still she went. And first she asked, anyone died in your house? And each house, every house, there was someone who had died. And then she came back, said, I couldn't find a single house like that. So Lord Buddha said, then why such a big hue and cry? If this is such a natural phenomena, why such a big hue and cry about that I have lost my son? So Maharaj Nimi, he is saying, Dehi Naam Kshana Bhangura. And then he says that, more rarer than this, Tatrapi Durlabham Manye, still more rarer than to get this human form of life, is to have darshan of Vaikuntha Priyas. Vaikuntha Priya Darshanam. Vaikuntha Priyas are the devotees of the Supreme Lord. To get their darshan, to get their association, is the most rarest of all phenomena, even within this rare human form of life. One time Lord Krishna and Narad Muni, they were having a samvad. And Lord Krishna asked Narad Muni, who is the greatest? So Narad Muni thought for a while and said, the earth planet is the greatest. And then Lord Krishna said, but on this earth planet, 75% is water. So Narad Muni said, then water is greatest. So Lord Krishna said, But Agastya Muni, in just one gulp, he drank all of that water from this earth planet. So then he said, then Agastya Muni is greatest. But he's just a star in the firmament. And when I appeared as Lord Vamanadev, I mapped the entire sky just with my two lotus feet. So then he said, then your lotus feet are greatest. And Krishna said, but my lotus feet are conquered within the hearts of my devotees, like you, Narad. Narad Muni was speechless. So then Krishna said, you are the greatest. Another time, Varuna Dev, he stopped Narad Muni and asked, Narad Muni, wherever I go, I see you. Just some time ago, you were in Prithvi Loka, and now you are seen here in Swarga Loka. Wherever I go, I see you. And Narad Muni, he said to Varuna Dev, that I'll just ask you two questions, and you have to answer yes or no. Is the Lord omnipresent? And he said, yes. The next question, do you find any time that the Lord is alone? And he said, no. Narad Muni said, Hare Krishna. So which means I am omnipresent. If Lord is omnipresent, and Lord is never alone, he is always with his devotees. So which means devotees are also omnipresent. In Mexico, Srila Prabhupada was asked by one reporter that, Swamiji, I see that your disciples offer food to your pitcher. So when they offer food to your pitcher, do you know about that wherever you are? Do you come to know that now this thing is offered to you? So Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna is omniscient. Krishna knows everything, and I am fully conscious of Krishna. So because Krishna knows everything, and I am fully conscious of Krishna, so Krishna lets me know everything, whatever I need to know. So you got your answer? And the reporter was thinking, Krishna is omniscient. And he's saying he's always thinking of Krishna, he's always conscious of Krishna. So in that sense, he knows that such a thing is happening, or whatever Krishna wants him to know. Like another time in New York, this one person asked Srila Prabhupada, if you say you are Guru, then you should know everything. Then tell us, how many windows are there in the Empire State Building? And Prabhupada, he shot back and said, this question is like, if I ask you, how many water droplets are there in a mirage? It's a baseless question. How can there be water droplets in a mirage? So therefore, Prabhupada said that I know whatever Krishna wants me to know. So over here, the position of pure devotee is established by Maharaj Nimi. And we see in this episode of Ajamil also that Ajamil was not Siddha Sattama in one sense. Over here, we are encountering a dichotomy between Ajamil's tons of sinful activities and that little devotional service which he performed towards the end of his life of just chanting the four syllables. So in the previous verses, Prabhupada writes that Ajamil performed sin with his body, mind and words. BMW. He was riding on a sinful car, BMW. Body, mind and words. And Prabhupada says that three Yamadutas came. One for his mind, one for his body, one for the words, the sinful words. So three Yamadutas for body, mind and words. Srila Prabhupada in one lecture was explaining that for Ajamil, in order for Ajamil to get 3 Yamadutas, he had to perform sinful activities for so many years, practically the major portion of his life. So many years he had to perform sinful activities with his body, mind and words. So many years of sins with his body, mind and words qualified him to get the darshan of Yamadutas. But in order to get the darshan of Vishnudutas, Vaikuntha Priyas, what did Ajamil have to do? Just in a moment's time, at the time of his death, he had to just utter 4 syllables. Narayana. And 4 Vishnudutas came. So 3 Yamadutas for body, mind and words, and 4 Yamadutas came to help Ajamil because he chanted the 4 syllables Narayana. So Srila Prabhupada is saying, so if we at the time of death, if we are able to chant the entire Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, we may get 32 Vishnudutas. Because the Maha Mantra has 32 syllables in it. So therefore Shukadeva Goswami is kind of resolving this dichotomy, that verse, by saying, Mriyamano Harer Nama Grinan Putro Pacharitam Ajamilo Pyagadhama Kimuta Shraddhayan Grinan. Mriyamano Harer Nama. Ajamil chanted Harinam when he was dying. And throughout his life, practically, he was a sinner. And in fact, he chanted, addressing, calling out to his son. Now again, we see the same Srimad Bhagavatam says, Deha Patya Kalatradishu Atma Sainyeshu Asachvapi. That at the time of death, if one is taking shelter of one's family members who are not devotees, then they are fallible soldiers. And here Ajamil was taking shelter of one of his family members, his son. Now, what power that son had to protect Ajamil? He was kind of an infant baby. But because it had that connection with Krishna, there was the Krishna element in that. What was the Krishna element? His name. That was the Krishna element. That saved Ajamil. So then Shukadeva Goswami in this verse is saying, Kimuta Shraddhayan Grinan. What to speak of those devotees who are chanting the holy names of the Supreme Lord with so much devotion, with a pure heart. What to speak of their gati? If this was the gati of Ajamil, that he was saved from the Yamapash, from the Yamadutas. And therefore we see that whenever devotional service is being spoken of, always devotional service is spoken with so much emphasis, emphatically, that swalpam apyasya dharmasya, or little bit of that, can save one from such great dangers. Again, in the 11th canto, Uddhava, as he is glorifying Lord Krishna, in one of the beautiful verses, he glorifies Lord Krishna by glorifying his lotus feet, in which he is saying, Tapatraina atihatasya ghore santapyamanasya bhava dhvanisha pashyanna anyat sharanam tavangri dvandvata patrat amrita bhivarshat. In this beautiful verse, Uddhav, he's saying that within this material world, everyone is suffering the tritapa. Tapatraena atihatasya ghore. Atihatasya, being beaten by the miseries of this material world, every living entity. And santapya manasya, and the beating which is being given to the conditioned living entity is making the conditioned living entity santapta. And Uddhav, he's saying, it is like shower of rain of miseries upon living entity. It's like now it is raining. Even if maybe this rain might not be so comfortable for some of us, but it is not so miserable. It is not santapta. So Uddhav is saying that what is the kind of rain which is being showered on the conditioned living entity? Imagine instead of the water droplets, if the water droplets turns into firebolts, you know, sparks, fire sparks being showered instead of water. So Uddhav is saying that this is the condition of the living entity, that constantly upon him he's been showered with firebolts of miseries of this material world. Santapya manasya bhava dvanisha, within this material world. But then he says that your two lotus feet, my dear Krishna, your two lotus feet are like that umbrella, atapatra. Pashyan na anyat sharanam tavangri. I can see no other recourse for a conditioned living entity other than your two lotus feet, which is acting like an umbrella. And Uddhav is saying that this umbrella of your lotus feet is very interesting and unique. That this umbrella is not only protecting the conditioned living entity from the firebolt like rains of miseries of this material world. Now imagine if you have an umbrella and above it all these fire sparks are falling on the umbrella. So automatically it will heat up the umbrella. Because of the fire, the umbrella will get heated up. So Uddhav is saying that this umbrella of your lotus feet is protecting the conditioned living entity from that kind of fire. But then there might be seen heat created from within because of the fire. So what your umbrella is doing simultaneously, there is an integrated system within this umbrella that it keeps showering amrita from inside. Amrita abhivarshat. So Uddhav is saying that this is the uniqueness of taking shelter of your lotus feet, that one not only is saved from the fiery rains of this material world, but amrita abhivarshat, your lotus feet, the umbrella of your lotus feet, atapatra, keep on showering amrita from inside. When Prithu Maharaj was crowned as the king, he was offered an umbrella by Varunadev. And that umbrella was something like this. From within, this umbrella was showering fine particles of cool water. So over here, Uddhav is corroborating the same fact that your lotus feet, atapatra, against ati hatasya, this material world. And therefore, we see that Krishna's limbs, they act in dual ways. Krishna's same lips, for Putana was death personified, and the same lips when he played upon his celebrated flute attracted all the gopis for the rasa dance. It is said that when Krishna opens his palm, the open palm of Krishna is as soft as a tender petal of a lotus flower for the devotees. But when that same palm Krishna closes and makes it into a fist, then that same palm turned into a fist becomes as hard as a thunderbolt for demons like Keshi. Krishna's lotus feet also like that act in dual ways. The same lotus feet delivered Ahalya, and the same lotus feet, when they were dancing on the hoods of Kaliya, Kaliya was actually experiencing such intense pain. It is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam that when Krishna decided to deliver Kaliya, Krishna, he first was thinking so many things in his mind that by this one act of mine, I have to accomplish many things. So Krishna, he tightened his waist cloth belt, he tightened it before he jumped. And the acharyas explain that it might be seen that Krishna was kind of afraid of Kaliya, that he was tightening his cloth belt, getting ready. Krishna doesn't have to get ready. Krishna can kill any of the demons even if he is unprepared, like he killed Aristasur like that. So Krishna was tightening his waist belt thinking that I have to dance on the hoods of Kaliya. So therefore, my dance performance for the gopis should be intact, pakka. So therefore, he was tightening his belt for that reason. Not that he was, you know, kind of afraid of Kaliya or preparing himself. Krishna can do even without any preparation as far as the demons are concerned. But for devotees, Krishna prepares. So Krishna jumped. And as Krishna jumped in the waters of Jamuna, it is explained just like a kingfisher jumps in a river to pick up a fish, its prey. Similarly, Krishna jumped in the waters of Jamuna like a kingfisher to catch this Kaliya. And then he started to swim right below the riverbed. And it appeared as if Krishna was heading towards Patal, the bottom of the universe, to destroy the bottom of the universe. He was like a scuba diver going so fast inside. And Kaliya, when he saw Krishna coming like that, Kaliya was for the first time now seeing Krishna. Kaliya, by that time, had only heard about Krishna. And the news had reached even, you know, within the waters of Jamuna till Kaliya. And what was that one news which Kaliya was very much alarmed by when Krishna killed Aghasur? So Kaliya thought Aghasur was also a serpent and from my own species. So when Kaliya saw Krishna, Kaliya was thinking, how did this small little child kill that Aghasur? I know this Aghasur, what kind of a demon he is. So Kaliya was thinking of Krishna as Aghanishudhan. In fact, Kaliya, he was observing the beauty of Krishna initially. And it appeared as if Krishna's charm was surpassing the elegance of a tamal tree. And Kaliya, he was a little bit appreciative of that beauty. But then immediately Kaliya, he started to attack Krishna and took Krishna in his coils. And when Krishna was within the coils of Kaliya, it appeared as if a full moon is enveloped by the dark branches of a tree. That is how Krishna was looking. A full moon circled by some dark branches of a dark tree. And Krishna, when he was enveloped by the coils of Kaliya, Krishna saw that the one by one the Brajavasis were falling unconscious. And then Krishna decided, okay, now I should begin my show before all of them, you know, they fall unconscious. So Krishna, with two of his hands, he held two of the hoods of Kaliya and jumped upon it. And just the touch of two of the hands of Krishna was so unbearable pain for Kaliya. And as soon as Krishna jumped on the hoods of Kaliya, it is said Kaliya had thousands of hoods, but the most prominent were 101 in number. So Krishna selected those 101 hoods to dance upon. And then Krishna started dancing. And when Krishna started dancing, all the Brajavasis, they saw Krishna, that the next moment Krishna is out of the coils and he is dancing on the hoods of Kaliya. And the demigods from the higher planets, the Siddhas, Charanas and all the other Kimpurushas, Gandharvas, when they saw, so immediately they came down with their musical instruments, because Krishna was dancing without any music. In fact, he was himself saying tathai, tathai and dancing on his own beats. Now, we know how difficult it is to dance when there is no music. Sometimes in the kirtan, you know, if the mridanga goes slow, we stop. Or if the mridanga stops, we also stop dancing. But Krishna's expertise in dancing, therefore, Shukadeva Goswami calls that he was Akhila Kala Adi Guru. He was appearing to be the originator of all the kala, all the fine arts of dancing. And Krishna was dancing so gracefully. All these demigods came with their instruments and they were like playing for Krishna. But after a certain time, they felt that we can't keep up with Krishna's dancing. They couldn't keep up with Krishna's dancing. So they just started observing Krishna and started to follow behind Krishna's steps. And as Krishna was dancing on those 101 hoods of Kaliya, which had jewels on it, so Krishna's pink lotus feet, it appeared coppery in color in contact with the dazzling jewels on the hoods of Kaliya. The pinkish lotus feet appeared to be coppery in color. But what was happening simultaneously, Kaliya was exuding poisonous fumes and he was vomiting blood and poison out from his mouth. So as Krishna was dancing, he was glancing at the gopis. So then he was establishing so many different things as he was dancing on Kaliya. The first reason as Krishna was dancing on Kaliya was, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains, that any expert dancer, he is always in search for a challenging surface to dance on. That if a surface is very challenging, then the dancer becomes more enthusiastic. Let me try out on this surface. So Krishna was thinking that I have danced on many surfaces, but nothing like dancing on hoods of a serpent. Like in tennis, we were told that a tennis player has to, an expert tennis player should know how to play on every surface. And the most challenging surface is the grass court. So if a tennis player cannot play on a grass court, then he's not a good tennis player. So herein Krishna was thinking that this is appears to be the most challenging of all surfaces to dance on. So let me try out dancing on the hoods of Kaliya. And then, as Krishna was dancing, another reason it is said why Krishna was dancing on Kaliya. Of course, Krishna wanted to purify Kaliya. For that reason, Krishna was giving the association of his lotus feet. And thirdly, it is said that Krishna was inviting all these demigods to come and dance along with him. Because later on, when Krishna will dance with the gopis in Ras Leela, they won't be allowed. So Krishna gave an opportunity that now is the time, if you want to see my dancing and join in this dancing, you can come and join. So Krishna was inviting all the demigods and their wives that they can dance along with him in this particular dance. And also Krishna was teaching the demigods and their wives how to properly dance. So he was teaching them that the dance of the spiritual world is completely of a different kind as against what you dance in your heavenly planets. And also Krishna was giving a trailer to the gopis that, you see my dancing? This is what we'll be doing in short time on Sharad Purnima. So Krishna was giving a piece of his dancing to all the gopis. So these were some of the reasons why Krishna was dancing like that on the hoods of Kaliya. And when Kaliya was suffering so much, all the poison was coming out, blood was coming out, and then the Nagapatnis, they realized that our husband has maybe rectified by Krishna, has been rectified by Krishna. So therefore they came forward to beg forgiveness on behalf of their husband. And they are saying the same kind of words where Uddhav is saying for Krishna's lotus feet. They are saying that this husband of ours, he was acting as Phana Atapatram. That his hoods were actually acting like umbrellas for us. Atapatram means umbrella. And Phana, his hoods, Kaliya's hoods, were acting like protective umbrellas for us. But now we know that what real protection is, your lotus feet. Because we thought that we are under his protection, and maybe one day we will convince him to become a devotee of yours. But actually, when he took shelter of this Atapatra, your lotus feet, the umbrella of your lotus feet, we can see that how he is becoming purified, and now soon he'll become a devotee of yours. So therefore, please don't kill him. Now we see in the episode of Putana also how Krishna dealt with the poison of Putana. Here Krishna dealt with the poison of Kaliya. And in the episode of Putana it is explained that when Putana disguised herself as that beautiful looking gopi, she was having a lotus flower in her hand and she was twirling it. And Mother Yashoda and Rohini, when they saw Putana in that beautiful form, Krishna immediately, he put his covering potency on Mother Yashoda and Rohini, that they should not recognize that she is a demon. Otherwise they will not allow her to come in. So Krishna had already planned how he is going to deliver Putana. So he covered Mother Rohini and Yashoda with his covering potency. And Yashoda and Rohini thought that this is Lakshmi entering. And maybe Lakshmi has come and she wants to have darshan of our Narayan deity in the house. When they said Narayan, they didn't refer to Krishna. They referred to the Narayan deity in their house. That maybe this Lakshmi has come to have darshan of Narayan. And they allowed her to enter into Vrindavan. Now again, as Putana was at the threshold of Nandabhavan, Nandabhavan was big, huge in size, so many rooms. So Krishna thought that Putana, if she asks anyone, where is Krishna lying? Then again, she may be exposed if she talks to anyone. So Krishna arranged by his Leela Shakti that Putana immediately came to know in which inner chamber Krishna was lying. So without asking anyone, Putana was like self-guided and she went inside and she saw Krishna lying. And the explanation is given by Shukadev Goswami that when Putana saw Krishna, Putana looked at Krishna and she understood that this baby is not ordinary. I have killed so many babies, I know the nature of babies, but this baby is not ordinary. And the example is given that for Putana, Krishna appeared as if a blazing fire is covered by ashes. And Putana appeared as a blazing fire outside, but her heart was like ashes. So Krishna externally, because he was in the human form, small baby, his effulgence was kind of covered by that small little form. So it was like blazing fire covered by ashes. And Putana externally was very beautiful, but her heart was like that ashes within it. Another example Shukadev Goswami gives, that it was like a sharp sword within a soft sheath. So Putana's heart was like a sharp sword. And as soon as she entered inside, she took Krishna on her lap. And Shukadev Goswami, he is in a beautiful verse kind of playing upon the words. As Putana is lifting Krishna and placing on her lap, Shukadev Goswami is saying, Anantam aropayat ankam antakam. This was the condition of Putana, that she was lifting Ananta, not realizing that I am lifting the unlimited, and placed it on her Anka, not recognizing that he will be the Antakam. So Anantam aropayat ankam antakam. Just like a foolish person doesn't recognize that this is a deadly snake and puts it on the lap. Similarly, Putana did that. And immediately she started feeding that deadly poison to Krishna. And Krishna immediately used his Samhara Shakti, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says. He used his Samhara Shakti to then take away the life airs of Putana. And also it is explained that Krishna was so much absorbed in drinking first the milk of Putana that Krishna closed his eyes and Krishna was actually thinking of Devaki, that I couldn't drink your milk. So thinking of Devaki, Krishna didn't realize when he had sucked away the life air of Putana. And Krishna used his Samhara Shakti. So then Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that you can't blame Krishna that Krishna killed Putana. It was not Krishna who killed Putana, but the Samhara Shakti killed Putana. So Krishna remains Paramadayalu as far as Putana is concerned here. And Chakravarti Pad gives the example that just like a man uses an axe to cut a tree, so you can say that the man cut the tree, but also you can say that the axe cut the tree. Now as far as the axe is concerned, the axe is dead matter. So the blame goes on to the person who used the axe. But in case of Krishna's Shaktis, they are not dead. They are all living. So in that sense, it was not Krishna who killed, but the Samhara Shakti of Krishna who killed Putana. And when Putana, when she was crying out, Samunchati, Munchati, that please leave me, leave me. Krishna was holding on to Putana very tightly. Said that when Krishna holds on to someone, he doesn't leave. And at that point of time, Krishna realized that if this Putana assumes her real form, 8 mile long real form, Vikrala Swarup, within Nanda Bhavan, then she'll create a bloody mess here. So then Krishna used his Ichha Shakti. And using his Ichha Shakti, he guided Putana outside of Nanda Bhavan. So first Putana, she screamed and she started running outside of Nanda Bhavan. And Yashoda and Rohini, they were looking at this Putana and they were thinking initially that she is Lakshmi, now turned into Durga. What has happened? So she was running outside and she came to open area where then she assumed her huge form. And then when she fell dead, Krishna was thinking that if she falls on the houses of the Brajabasis or all the other living entities of Vrindavan, she'll kill all of them. So Krishna again by his Ichha Shakti arranged that she should fall on a particular garden which was in one corner of Brajamandal, which belonged to Kamsa. So Putana actually fell on that particular fruit-laden garden, which was the personal garden of Kamsa. So she only destroyed the personal garden of Kamsa when she fell. And then of course we know how Krishna was playing fearlessly on the body of Putana, having a new playground to play on. And the Brajavasis immediately, they climbed on the body of Putana, took Krishna down. And then immediately the first aid treatment started off, cow therapy with gobar, then gomutra, goraj and all that. And that was the time when Krishna took a vow. Krishna was only 6 days old when he killed Putana. So Krishna took a vow that these cows have helped me today. So from this day on, I'll be known as Gopal. I'll be the one who will be giving protection to these cows. And after that, when they saw that Putana was dead, lying 8 miles long, this huge mammoth-sized body, now it had to be disposed of. So all the Brajavasis, they cut the body of Putana into pieces and started burning it, cremated. And then Shukadev Goswami explains that how the smell which was coming, the burning of Putana's body, was like the smell of aguru. So why Putana's body was smelling like aguru? The first reason is that Krishna took out all the contamination. So there was no contamination within. So therefore the only thing which was left was purity. So there was no smell. It was in fact fragrance. And the second reason, because Krishna was personally playing on the body of Putana. Now generally we see that when someone dies, his dead body is thrown in Ganga or cremated next to Ganga. Why? Because when the ashes and the dead body is thrown in Ganga, then that soul can be delivered by the touch of Ganga. Now what is Ganga? Ganga is just foot wash of Krishna. So if the foot wash of Krishna can do something like that, what to speak of the foot of Krishna? So Krishna's personal foot was on the body of Putana. Therefore her body was smelling like a guru. And thirdly, whenever someone dies, it's very much essential who is performing the last rites. It depends. If a qualified Purohit is performing the last rites, then the soul might be delivered. Now who was performing the last rites for Putana? Not some paid Brahmanas, but the topmost of all devotees of Krishna, the Brajavasis. And fourthly, Putana died in Shri Vrindavan Dham. So all these reasons because of which Putana's body had to smell like a guru when it was burnt. And therefore, Shukadev Goswami is saying that what is the fortune of Putana? Putana was born a Rakshasi, first of all. Now that was okay. Putana was born as a Rakshasi. But amongst the Rakshasas, she was Balaghatini. Like even in the Western world, when someone is a child abuser, he's the most degraded of all, you know, sinners. So Putana was not just a Rakshasi, but Balaghatini. And she would not just kill children, but Rudhira Ashana. She would eat and drink their blood. So that made her more abominable. And thirdly, what to speak of all of that? Putana had come to kill which baby? Krishna. Jigham Shayapi Haraye. She had come to kill Krishna. So then Shukadev Goswami is saying, what to speak of those who are feeding Krishna their milk out of love? When Putana, she came to kill Krishna and fed that poisonous milk, she was delivered. And therefore Uddhav, he's expressing his surprise. Aho bakiyam stanakala kutam jigham shaya payad apya sadhvi lebhe gatim dhatruchitam tatonyam kamva dayalum sharanam rajeme. Who is more merciful than this Krishna, that who gave dhatri gati to this Putana? And Chakravarti Pad explains that actually Putana went to Golok Vrindavan. And she went over there and she was under two nurses of Krishna. Ambika and Kilimba. These were the two personal nurses of Krishna. And Putna actually became assistant to these two nurses of Krishna. And in fact, the Sri Vaishnava Acharyas explain that in Krishna's disappearance pastime, when that hunter Jara shot his arrow at the lotus toe of Krishna. So just like when a small child is confronted with some danger, what does the small child do? Immediately the small child cries out for its mother, mummy or mama. So when Krishna was attacked by that Jara, Krishna, who was 125 years old then, he also cried out for his mother. And three mothers came: Devaki, Yashoda and Putana. Immediately three mothers appeared as Krishna called out for his mother. That was the position of Putana. And therefore they say that anyone with sincere heart hears this pastime of Krishna sucking the breast of Putana will not have to do that himself in the next life. Will not have to take birth and suck some mother's breast in the next life. Just by hearing with patient heart this particular pastime of Putana being delivered by Krishna. So by these episodes we see how Krishna's mercy upon his devotees, or even somebody who came with that sharp heart, with that ash-like heart, that Krishna delivered her. And therefore, over here in this episode, we see that how Ajamil, by that little swalpam apyasa, by that little devotion service which he performed, he was saved. And therefore, this verse is there: Mahavipattav samsare yasmaret madhusudana vipattav tasya sampatti bhavet ityaha Shankara. That somebody might be in mahavipatti within this material world, but if he just remembers Madhusudana, just remembers Krishna, yasmaret Madhusudana, then that vipatti turns into sampatti. That is the greatest sampatti, of remembering the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, over here we see that how devotional service is so hope-giving from this episode of Ajamil. And if Ajamil was delivered when he just uttered those four syllables at the time of his death, so as Srila Prabhupada says, if we practice chanting Hare Krishna throughout our life, and if we are fortunate enough to chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra at the time of our death, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. We may be fortunate to have 32 Vishnudutas. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.